I caught a catfish weighed 82 pounds.
I've caught a 75 with the Lunker. We've been with boys, caught a 94, and seen boys catch a 84, and then our group personally, the biggest one we've ever boated was 75.
Biggest one I ever caught, I had to cut my line, so I really don't know. But it would have pulled me in if I hadn't cut my line out in the boat.
I caught one. I didn't even put him in the boat. I didn't want him in the boat with me. Made him break off. Ooh, that he'd have weighed well over 100 pounds.
Catfish for the street. That's that catfish, what do you mean? Have that catfish by his mouth. Get careful with you, this kid.
The catfish swims deeply through American culture. It surfaces every so often in fish stories and in folklore and literature. Sometimes as a low-down scoundrel, other times, as in Mark Twain's Life on the Mississippi, as a menacing monster.
A big catfish collided with Marquette's canoe and startled him. And reasonably enough, for he'd been warned by the Indians that he was on a foolhardy journey, and even a fatal one, for the river contained a demon whose roar could be heard at a great distance, and who would engulf them in the abyss where he dwelt. I have seen a Mississippi catfish that was more than 6 feet long and weighed 250 pounds. And if Marquette's fish was a fella to that one, he had a fair right to think the river's roaring demon was come.
In blues songs, the catfish is neither low down nor demonic, but attractive and virile.
Well, I was a catfish. Swimming in the deep blue sea, I have all your women fishing at me, fishing at me.
To blues man Big Jack Johnson, the catfish symbolizes something even more basic.
Yeah, it represents a good eat. That's what it represents, a good piece of fish on your plate. That's what it represents.
And for a growing number of people in the Mississippi Delta, catfish represents not just a good meal, but a good livelihood.
I'm Spooky Bearden from Isola, Mississippi.
Spooky Bearden is a third-generation Mississippi Delta farmer. His father, and his father before him, made a comfortable living growing cotton and soybeans on hundreds of acres of rich Delta land. In the late 60s, when farm prices were low, the Beardens decided to flood a few of their soybean fields and try their hand at growing some catfish.
And we didn't know anything about it, and that was before you get the custom harvesters, because everybody was new.
So new that the first time the Beardens went to harvest their catfish, disaster nearly struck.
The whole family was over at this day. You know, this is a big deal. We harvested the first fish. And my younger brother, Bob, he was in the boat, and we were moving along slow, seining the fish, and he decided he'd just get out and take a little swim in the pond. And before he noticed, the boat had drifted away. And he's out in the middle of a 20-odd acre pond. And before we knew it, he was in serious trouble. And if it hadn't been for the other two brothers being there that day, I think we would have lost him, because when we got him to the bank, of course, we had to carry him to the hospital, and they pumped the water out and whatever. And none of the family will never forget that particular day, I can assure you.
Spooky's brother survived, and today the Beardens are one of the biggest producers of farm-raised catfish in the entire Mississippi Delta. During the growing season, though, Spooky says it seems like he's married to his catfish ponds.
Now, it's 24 hours a day, 7 days a week in the summer months. And the hardest part of it is finding people that will work weekends and nights. Labor is your number one problem.
It's not hard to see why a person might not want to work the graveyard shift on a catfish farm for $5 an hour. When the sun goes down in the Mississippi Delta, the frogs sound the warning that the bugs are taking over.
The bugs eat you up. They get in your eyes and ears, and nose, and mouth, and then when they get through stopping everything up, the mosquitoes touch you. They'll eat you up too.
For 3 years, Wes Bobo spent his nights and early mornings, about 100 hours a week, battling bugs and tending catfish ponds near Rolling Fork, Mississippi.
You just babysit catfish. I guess you could call it babysitting, because I'm on top of it, they act just like babies. You got to watch them.
From sundown to sunup, Bobo would race from pond to pond, making sure the oxygen levels didn't drop too low.
It'll make you gray-headed and give you ulcers and everything, because it ain't fun at all.
The stress comes from knowing that if there's not enough oxygen in the pond, tens of thousands of catfish worth tens of thousands of dollars could die in a matter of minutes. It happened one night to Wes Bobo.
It just was solid fish on the top with their bellies up. They probably had 300,000 pounds in there, and it was just solid fish. You could walk across them just about.
In the beginning, farmers would lose ponds of catfish on a regular basis, simply because they wouldn't know where to place an aerator or how to treat a common disease. Tommy Taylor worked with catfish farmers in those early years, the 60s and 70s. He was a county agent for the state's Agricultural Extension Service for 32 years, until his retirement in 1989. Tommy Taylor is considered the grandfather of catfish farming in the Mississippi Delta. But listening to his old war stories, it seems like he was more of a catfish midwife.
I held a lot of hands, yes, a lot of hands. I was up with a fella at 3 o'clock one morning, called me on the phone, had fish up, dying, graveyard dead, from oxygen depletion. And he was crying on the phone. This is a 60-year-old man. And what he had done is he'd put all of his savings into this one farm. He hadn't sold any fish, and they were ready to sell, and they were going to die on him, and he could just see everything he had losing them. And I told him I'd be there in a few minutes.
Taylor saved the farmer's investment by simply moving a big paddle wheel a few feet, aerating the part of the pond where the oxygen level had become critically low.
And the fish went down in less than 5 minutes after we moved the paddle wheel around a little bit, and the fish went down.
Back then, Tommy Taylor was one of only a handful of people in the Mississippi Delta doing any kind of research or diagnostic work on catfish. His first laboratory was a makeshift operation in the back of his office.
Oh, it was a huge laboratory, very expensive. I had one microscope and six plastic buckets.
These days, teams of scientists in state-of-the-art laboratories are experimenting with gene splicing and selective breeding, all in an effort to produce healthier, meatier, and faster-growing catfish. It's feeding time at a catfish farm just north of Belzona, Mississippi. A truck moves slowly along a levee next to a catfish pond, spraying out small pellets of special protein-rich feed that hungry catfish swarm to and gobble up. With the exception of some algae, which farmers try their best to control, this feed is the only thing farm-raised catfish eat, a fact industry promoters like to emphasize. Bill Allen is president of the Catfish Institute.
The selling point for farm-raised catfish is the fact that it's consistent. It's always a channel catfish, Ictularis punctatus, to start with. It's raised in fresh water in controlled environmental conditions and fed a floating pellet, so it's not a bottom dweller, it's not a scavenger. This fish eats from the top of the water.
Since 1986, the Catfish Institute has spent millions of dollars raised through dues paid by feed mills, trying to elevate the status of the catfish. The investment has paid off handsomely. Sales of farm-raised catfish have tripled. It's on menus all over the country, from army mess halls to gourmet restaurants, due largely to Madison Avenue ad campaigns.
A message from the Catfish Institute.
Yes, there is a Catfish Institute. Folks dedicated to promoting that most miraculous of fish, U.S. farm-raised catfish. We don't have a fancy high-rise address. Nope, you just go 35 miles north of Yazoo City, right off 49 West in Belzona, Mississippi. It is here. That's the important work of the Catfish Institute.
From the front of his small office in downtown Belzona, Bill Allen can look up and down Main Street and see business after business that wouldn't be here if it weren't for catfish. There's a factory that makes paddle wheels. There's the Aqua Center, a catfish supply store. It also houses a catfish doctor who makes house calls. And just around the corner is the new Catfish Museum, featuring a 40-foot-long catfish sculpture and fountain out front. In Mississippi, at least, Belzona, population 2,500, is the catfish capital of the world.
If you look at our downtown Belzona compared to some of the other Delta towns where catfish didn't catch on, the main thing you'll notice is that while we're not a great metropolitan area, we're still somewhat fixed up, nice looking town, and it's completely due to catfish. And as you see people walking up and down the street, you see a common thing now is a head net. They're coming out of the catfish plants wearing head nets for quality control.
The biggest catfish processing plant in the Mississippi Delta and in the world is Delta Pride. Delta Pride employs 1,200 hourly workers. Most of them are here at the main plant in Indianola, just up the road from Belzona. Truckloads of live catfish, harvested from nearby ponds just a few minutes earlier, arrive here at the Delta Pride loading dock, flipping and flopping as they're dumped into holding tanks. A few minutes later, they're stunned with 40 volts of electricity. What little life is left in these catfish is quickly terminated when they arrive by conveyor belt here at the first workstation inside the plant. At a rate of about 1 per second, catfish are fed to a worker in a white smock standing in front of a long, narrow, vertical saw blade. Sarah White did this job when she started at Delta Pride in 1983.
What you do, you hold the head with one hand and with the other hand you hold the tail. And what you do is you cut around sort of like the gill, the fin part, and you get a good round cut and take the head off. Then it goes to the ripping table where there's a sharp pointed knife. And what you would do, you would start at the belly of the fish and bring it up towards the neck and rip that whole stomach. Then it go to the long gunner, and that's where you got an air suction, a pipe running down, and you press that fish from the neck up on that air suction, and it will suck all the insides out.
From here, the catfish are run through a skinning machine, then distributed on a series of conveyor belts to different departments within the plant to be hand filleted, dipped in Cajun or lemon pepper seasoning, frozen, packaged, and shipped out. With few exceptions, the hourly workers at Delta Pride and at all the other catfish processing plants in the Mississippi Delta are African American women.
That is the workforce that exists in the Delta.
David Spencer is president and CEO of Delta Pride.
It's the kind of work that I think that they feel comfortable in doing, and they gravitate to the jobs that we have available here.
I guess teen pregnancy played a big part in it for a lot of us.
Delta Pride worker Sarah White.
Got pregnant at an early age, ended up on the welfare line with not a lot of work ground here, not having an education. When the catfish industry came in, then it was booming. As full of young, you know, black females that sort of like improve themselves, get off the welfare line. That was in all our thoughts, is to try to do better for our kids.
But Sarah White soon found it difficult to balance a family budget on $3.40 an hour. She wasn't too crazy about the working conditions either.
You know, on the kill line, you have all that debris in your face from the fish, the blood, the guts, the eggs, and the whole works. And they wouldn't even let us go off and wash our face.
So, in 1986, White led a campaign to unionize Delta Pride workers. Not an easy task in a fiercely anti-union part of the country, where workers were routinely fired for simply signing a union card. Any organizing work would have to be done outside the plant.
So we would like get them at Piggly Wiggly, Sunflower, Walmart, Fred's, in the parking lot. And we just had to almost talk about jumping on them for to make them sign that card.
The organizing drive was successful, and in 1987, Delta Pride workers voted to join the United Food and Commercial Workers Union. 3 years later, Sarah White led a walkout at the plant, the largest strike by African American workers in Mississippi history.
We come this far by faith, on the Lord.
It was a spirited strike, drawing the support of national civil rights leaders who were on hand at rallies like this one at a nearby church. Workers demanded higher wages and an end to what they said was a plantation mentality at Delta Pride. Management, they contended, cared more about the number of trips employees took to the bathroom than it did about the rising incidence of carpal tunnel or repetitive motion syndrome from long hours on the line, chopping, skinning, and filleting.
The main thing is, they care about their fish. That's what they care about. That's the main, that's number one. That's all they want their fish to do. They don't care nothing about you.
This is people being mistreated out there, and we just can't take it no more. We do hard work for nothing.
Throughout the strike, Delta Pride maintained that it had the best working conditions in the industry, that it treated its workers fairly, and that wages were reasonable considering high fish prices and increased competition. But after 4 months and a national boycott of Delta Pride catfish, the company was forced to make concessions on wages and health issues.
It finally ended because we kicked their butts.
Today, Sarah White says things at Delta Pride have never been better.
Things are great. When I say great, I mean it's full of working with the company, having an understanding, being able to talk. We don't mean that we don't disagree on things, but now we got a management team that's willing to sit, listen.
Part of that new management team is Delta Pride President David Spencer. He's in the process of trying to get hourly workers more involved in the day-to-day running of the plant.
The people who do the work are generally the people who know how to make the work better and how to make the company better, because they have to do it every day, and we need to foster an environment where they feel comfortable in making suggestions and helping us make this a better company.
The labor dispute at Delta Pride may have been settled, but there's an ongoing disagreement involving catfish that may never be resolved.
I'd like a catfish plate, please. Could you tell me what all comes on it?
It's between those who like the sweet, mild taste of farm-raised catfish and those who prefer the more flavorful and fishier taste of catfish caught in the wild. While farmers and processors promote the consistency of grain-fed catfish, bluesman Big Jack Johnson thinks a catfish tastes better when it eats the food it wants to, not what it has to. So he favors the catfish he catches right here at DeSoto Lake near Clarksdale, especially when they're prepared with his own secret batter.
Oh, deep frying with the fish batter that I have and peanut oil. And Lord have mercy.
I'm Dan Collison.